Okay, good evening, everybody, or good afternoon, I guess, early evening. Appreciate everybody being here. This is the Montclova Township Board of Zoning Appeals. I'd call this meeting to order. If you could stand with me and say pledge allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Again, thank you, everyone, for being here. We've got three cases tonight. If you could do roll for us, that would be great.
Stanton.
Present.
Lyons.
Present.
Ballmer.
Present.
Ross.
Present.
Stewart.
Present.
Okay, thank you. I would call a motion to approve the meeting minutes from April 10th as recorded by the recording secretary.
Motion.
Second.
Second by Ballmer. On the motion, Stanton.
Yes.
Stewart.
Yes.
Ballmer.
Yes.
Lyons.
Yes.
Ross.
Yes.
Okay, a couple housekeeping items for this evening. As I mentioned, we have three cases. The first one that we're going to look at this evening, we'll look at them in this order, is the pool in the side yard. That'll be number one. Dana Limited will be number two. And then the bed and breakfast will be number three. So we'll go ahead and get started this evening with the pool. So this is a request for a side yard per section, or a pool and side yard per section 9.15 of the zoning resolution at 7505 Creek Ridge. The applicants, Mark and Cindy Martin, represented by James Moline Builders. So, zoning administrator, the floor is yours.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Chair. This is a variance request for an in-ground pool, 7505 Creek Ridge Drive. And the applicants, Mark and Cindy Martin, are requesting the variance because they have a very unique yard. They have a steep drop off, pretty close to the edge of their building area. And so the way our zoning code is written, basically a pool has to be totally in back of all parts of the house, and that would be very hard to do on this lot. And so that's the reason they're requesting a variance to build it in what I'm calling the courtyard area is the easiest way to describe it. But that's the reason for their variance is due to the fact of topography. And so both the applicant is here, Mr. Martin, and also his agent, Ryan Moline, so they can explain it in more detail.
Okay. Gentlemen, which one of you would like to come up and give us some information?
Easy stuff. Yeah. And I pulled a fair amount of this data.
Okay, well, why don't you come up and we'll swear you in and we'll...
What do you want?
Just go ahead and up at the stand there. It'd be great. So we're going to go ahead and swear you in. So we'll do individually. So do you swear that the testimony you're about to give before this board is the truth, as so answer unto God? Say I do.
I do.
Okay. Thank you. State your name and address for the record, please.
Mark Martin, 3050 Deep Waterloo, Maumee.
Okay. And who are you representing?
He's the owner.
Are you the owner?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, just wanted to make sure. Okay. Appreciate it.
I pulled a fair amount of this data off of your website, so it has some drawings and things like that. I assume most of you are in receipt of those and have them in front of you and so forth. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty straightforward. I don't know how this is being observed as a side yard, but if we can just get beyond that, I can show you the road is in the front and the pool is in the back. I'm not sure, respectfully, how the side yard language came into play. I, of course, would be willing to listen to that. I think we're in pretty good order, actually. So. I think I would really have a question as to that being a side yard, being non-confrontational. I guess we just didn't understand how that's a side yard.
Yeah, basically the way the pool language is written, you have to be totally in back of all parts of the house and totally in back. It's in an outdoor courtyard area, and so it doesn't...
The rear of the house.
Yeah. Yes, and so that's the reason is... That's just the way the language is written, and so I have to I have to deny it, and then your ability is then to go to the BZA to ask for a variance. That's the only reason.
Which we're doing, and we would appreciate that.
It's like you draw a box around the extreme edges of your house.
Right.
And the pool would have to be behind that.
Okay. And as the box would show, it would be in this case.
Well, he's saying it would have to be behind here. Like this is the back of your house.
You draw a box that would look like this.
Uh-huh.
They were saying, in other words.
And the pool would have to be back here, down over the,
per
over
code.
The hill.
Per code. But yours is kind of like Eric said,
in
the courtyard.
Oh, so I figured the back of the house is the back of the house. And
it's extreme back of the house, the farthest.
So it has to be outside of the back of the house.
It's got to be beyond any projections of the house.
Those are garages.
It's got to be behind any projections of the house. So it's got to be totally behind the entire house.
Okay. I'm saying it would encompass it. You're saying it by the zoning words, it would have to be outside the box that encompasses the house.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. That's where the confusion was, because we're like, what are we missing here? Now I know what we're missing here. Okay. You'd ask for your... allowance of that, please. I think that's all. I'd be willing to take any questions. Not sure what else I can do.
Any questions from the board? Okay. You want to share anything additional to that? If so, come on up. If not, it's up to you.
Are there any questions I can answer? Anything? If not, I'll have a seat.
Yeah, I guess we're not right now.
Is this the type of forum then when you folks take a vote and we watch and cry or smile?
I mean, only if there's if there's any like concerns about that or like, then that would be the only reason.
Okay.
I want to take your
time. All right, good enough. So, anybody opposed to in the room opposed to this that we need to bring up to the forefront, or those in opposition to this? Seeing none, we'll close the testimony, public testimony. Jeff, I think you have something kind of written down, right?
Mr. Chairman, when we look at variances, we're looking at section 16.2C and the five criteria that we're looking at. And number one is that there are some unique physical circumstances or conditions. As the rear of the lot is a ravine, and to construct a retaining wall to hold up the pool is going to be in the fill material would be, I think, prohibitive, even for a good pool builder. And number two, because of the ravine, the proposed pool cannot be located in the required rear yard. And I think we just talked about that. And three, the hardship has not been created by the applicant. The applicant has designed the house around the pool so as to utilize the garage to screen the pool from the neighbors to the west. And the variance won't alter the essential character of the neighborhood in which the property is located. And number five, the variance will represent the minimum variance that will afford relief. So with that, I would move to approve a variance to section 9.15A to allow an in-ground swimming pool in the side yard at 7505 Creek Ridge Road.
Second.
Second by Stanton. On the motion, Lines?
Yes.
Ross?
Yes.
Stanton?
Yes.
Stewart?
Yes.
Ballmer?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. The second one this evening is conditional use for DanaCorp at 3941 Technology Drive, and zoning administrator, floor's yours.
Sure, thank you. So Gem Energy, who is the agent for Dana Corporation, is requesting a conditional use to install a solar energy project at 3941 Technology Drive. This property is located directly to the south of the Dana headquarters facility, and it will be accessed from the existing Dana headquarters facility. And that kind of speaks for it. I mean, the applicant is here, and he can explain in more technical detail, but it's a solar energy field that's right in the back of Dana.
Okay. All right, we'd like to come on up.
Go ahead and state your name.
Kyle Kreft with Gem Energy.
Address you're representing?
The property address or my address?
Property address.
3941 Technology Drive.
Okay. So we'll go ahead and swear you in. Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give before the board is the truth, so help you answer unto God?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
Like Eric had said, we are proposing a solar array for the Dana World Headquarters. Dana World Headquarters building is here on the corner of or on the 90-degree bend on Technology Drive. The project site here is just immediately south of their existing parcel. We've been working with Dana on this project, developing it for probably a solid 2 years now. Dana just went, at one point it was twice as big. They were looking at following this line directly across to the east, the parcel east of it. It was going to be 20 acres. Through working with Toledo Edison, it is now a 10-acre project. Just on one parcel, I think technically it's two parcels. There's a real narrow one there in the middle with the row of trees and billboards there, but essentially 10 acres on the one parcel. Dana just purchased the property. I think the sale went through and they took ownership of that parcel in mid-January of this year. So, like I said, been working with Dana and Toledo Edison to get all the preliminary work done and upfront funding and financing, all that kind of stuff, and the proper approvals, interconnection with Toledo Edison in place. It will be tying directly into their existing substation, you know, right there, right adjacent to the site, and then feeding solely the Dana World Headquarters building. Power will not go outside. Anything that's generated will be used by Dana. It will not be allowed to go anywhere else back onto the grid. So, high level, then it's a ground mount project, fixed tilt. Depending on your the most representative thing that I can project at Penna. I don't know if you guys drive down I-75 at all in Perrysburg. There's a very similar representative project at Penna we built in 2020. So from a visual perspective, that one's a triangular shape. This one will be a square, but from a visual perspective, the Penna project is what this will look like.
Or also, will it look like by the 180 out there?
Depending on your opinion, the layperson might say yes. To me, my opinion would be no, but I do it for a living, so.
Okay. What's the in-service date, or when's construction going to start and or in-service date?
Answer to both of those is as soon as possible. Realistically, you know, everything goes well here and continues, no other hiccups in the next few months. Construction would start this fall, in service roughly this time next year, hopefully, you know, a month or two short of this time. But generally speaking, start construction this fall. Got a good winter weather. Our intent would be to work all winter long and get it done and turn it on late next spring. So
doesn't look like there's any site work necessarily, with the exception of a little access drive.
The
site's going to remain essentially the same elevation. We're not doing any grass grading or anything like that.
Correct. No. Yeah. Typically, we leave them as is, and you know, farm fields. Runoff coefficients from, you know, in terms of stormwater runoff, the runoff coefficients improve as we plant grass under them, all around them, and that improves the runoff coefficients, improves the site, slows water down moving across the site. Kind of the intent here with this project, so there'll be, you know, this southernmost line will essentially stay where it is. We put a low point in the middle, high point, another low point, and then high point again to keep any of the water on site. It's not a traditional detention pond. The water would stay on site within the boundary of the system without, you know, we're not intending on shoving it, you know, to any of the adjacent parcels or Dana's existing parcel. So there would be minor grading, but nothing like what's going on in the adjacent corner.
Do you run your stormwater plan through the county?
Not yet, but okay. Yes, that is, we are well aware of that. We met with the county, I think, the week just before the 4th of July, so.
Okay.
But yes, we had met with Dave Golis with the county, and we'll be going through all that process here in the coming weeks, so. This is kind of the make or break point for us, you know, so.
It's unusually the drainage on the site and have it percolate in the ground without having to go someplace.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of the bounds we have to play in, so, you know, not going to send it elsewhere and, you know, it's not, you know, putting sewers in isn't cost effective for this type of project, so their projects are cost sensitive, so.
You mentioned, is there a future expansion to the east? Did you mention that?
I mean, for all intents and purposes, no. Initially, the proposed project was essentially two times the size it is now. The reason it got cut back to half is through work at Toledo Edison process. Like I said, all the energy produced by it will be used directly by the Dana World Headquarters building. It will not be allowed to go back onto the grid. So it was through the Edison process. So the initial proposed site was going to produce too much power, so we had to downsize to what it is currently.
Are your panels and the anti-glare material? Or would there, would you see a little
glare? Yeah, I mean, inherently, solar panels are designed to absorb sunlight and to produce electricity. So, yes, inherently, yes, they are all designed to absorb electricity.
How about the frames? They'd
be aluminum frames.
Painted black, maybe?
I'd have to look at the spec sheet. I believe they would be silver. It's typical. Black is typically for residential roofs.
I'm just curious because northbound on the expressway, the new lane is going to be a little bit higher than the existing lane. And as you're coming up there, you see a little glare coming in the drivers and think, what's going on there? I mean, they will look because it's curious.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're, like I said, solar arrays are, they're on airports, they're on along highways all over the country. Solar modules are inherently designed to absorb sunlight and, you know, turn it into electricity. They're not designed to reflect it and bounce it elsewhere. So, understand your point, or understand the basis of your question.
Yeah.
Lots of things can happen, right, under a perfect storm with situations. But, like I said, these projects are built on along highways, on airports, 365 days a year, essentially. And they're around for 25, 30 years. So.
What kind of lead time do you have on your products right now with the solar?
The financer for the project has the modules on hand in a warehouse. Like I said, this is kind of one of many make or break lines for us before we start ordering. Racking, the design and stuff is done. The testing for all that sort of stuff is done. I just have to tell them to start manufacturing, at which point I think 6 weeks I would have the material. I'm not to that point in needing it in 6 weeks, so they're not moving. Transformers and some of the electrical switch gear is going to be the longest type stuff that is not ordered yet, because, you know, it's, as soon as we order it, we got to write a check. So until we know we're through this process, we're done writing checks. So
is Dana ultimately funding this project, or is the funding coming from someplace else?
Dana owns the property. They will continue to own the property. There is a third-party financer that is going to pay for all the equipment, own and operate that, and then sell the power back to Dana through a power purchase agreement. Basically, it's paying a monthly electrical bill like they would to the utility. So Dana is funding it through the monthly payment of that power purchase agreement throughout the term of the contract. They funded the land, and like I said, they will maintain ownership of the land, and then they will be required to purchase all the power that's generated from it. And then they pay that, like I said, on a monthly basis, just like paying an electric bill to the utility.
Any issue with past projects on their financing and paying contractors, paying
Dana?
Well, the third party financer that's writing the checks. Any issue with on a past project getting paid by somebody like that?
No, they are. I can't even. The numbers of zeros behind that company is.
Are they stopping. United States based?
Yes, Florida, NextEra, part of Florida Power.
NextEra, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Notice you get some landscape screening on the west and the south side.
Yes, yep.
And there's some existing on the north side on Dana's property. Anything proposed for the east side?
There's an existing tree line there. Separating the two portions of the field, there's an existing tree line there.
Okay. Any other questions from the board? Okay. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Any in the audience, anybody that's in favor of this change, why don't you come forward right at the moment? Seeing none, we'll ask if there's anybody opposed. Seeing none there. I think what we'll do at this point, I would move to close the public hearing at this point.
Second by Ross. On the motion, Ross.
Yes.
Stanton.
Yes.
Stewart.
Yes.
Ballmer.
Yes.
Lyons.
Yes. At this point, I'd move to go to executive session for a few minutes.
Yes.
Stanton. Yes.
Lyons.
Yes.
Ross.
Yes. To return from executive session.
Second.
Second by Ballmer. On the motion, Stewart?
Yes.
Ballmer?
Yes.
Lyons?
Yes.
Ross?
Yes.
Stanton?
Yes. Appreciate everybody's patience. Were there any additional questions from the board? Okay. We're moving on to the next step. Mr. Ballmer?
Mr. Chairman. This is kind of unique because we do not have anything in the code for solar power. Wind power, yes, so we're kind of, although the trustees are working on
they
it.
They are working on it. Yeah,
so you're the guinea pig. And both solar power and wind power will be in the conditional use criteria under Section 8. And we found that this proposal fits in with the general objectives of the Monclova Land Use Plan, and that the proposed solar energy project will serve an existing facility located in the M1 district. The project will not change the essential character of the area, as it is screened on the west by the Senator Group, on the north by Dana, in a manufacturing industrially zoned area. And third, the project will not be hazardous or disturbing to existing or future neighbors. Fourth, the project will be adequately served by public services. And the project will not involve uses, activities, processes, materials, equipment that will be detrimental by reason of excessive production of traffic, noise, smoke, fumes, vibration, or odors. So it's
Motion to approve conditional use for solar energy project 3941 Technology Drive, subject to letter from Captain Bachelman dated June 22nd, 2023. Review and approve from storm water and drainage plan by Lucas County Engineers. Plan approved by Maclova Township Fire Prevention Bureau.
I'll second.
Second by Ballmer. On the motion, Ballmer?
Yes.
Ross?
Yes.
Stanton?
Yes.
Stewart?
Yes.
Limes?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. You're free to go if you want.
I live in Maclova.
Okay, case number three this evening. It is a conditional use for bed and breakfast at 5931 River Road. Mr. Administrator.
Well, thank you, Chair. As the Chairman said, this is a conditional use for bed and breakfast at 5931 River Road. And the applicants are here tonight, and what they're planning to do is they have a house with a walkout basement, and the walkout basement portion would be the bed and breakfast while they would be living in the upstairs of the property. And so it would be them living upstairs, the bed and breakfast would be downstairs. And they provided a site plan as well as pictures showing the interior and the outside of the property.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So who would like to take the stand? We'll do it one at a time. If there's going to be both of you guys, we'll do it individually.
Okay.
So yeah, come on up. So go ahead and state your name and your address.
My name is Chris Burns. I live at 5931 North River Road, Maclova.
Okay. Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give before this board is the truth as you answer unto God?
I do.
Okay. The floor is yours.
So my wife in attendance, Melissa, and I started a bed and breakfast for an Airbnb is where we market it. We purchased the house 3 years ago. And since that time, we've done some improvements, invested back into the community. We are looking to do the bed and breakfast primarily because, one, we have a spectacular property, 1 acre on the river. How it got really discussed was having friends and family over, and they just said, you had a spectacular property. And that's how it got discussed. And then the walleye run, and all the tourists coming in. We would like to offer not just a bed and breakfast per se, but an experience. And that's really what we love to do is host guests, bring people in, stay local, invest local, and you know, we would like to host no more than 6 people. That's really all we can accommodate anyway. I think our setup is very efficient for hosting people. It's safe. I'm honestly a fire department as a captain, so I've kind of been trained to be safe. Smoke detectors, fire extinguishers, whatnot. I think the biggest takeaway is we live there. We're right upstairs. we don't want anything unsafe coming into our own home, let alone our neighborhood. So we try to accommodate anything and everything, very versed with the fire codes, building codes, so we thinking way ahead as far as safety goes. Again, smoke detectors, carbon monoxide detectors, anything that I've ever been trained that could go wrong, we've pretty much already addressed it. So we offer a very nice place, as you can see in the pictures, and that's pretty much.
So I don't want to cut you off if you have something more to say, but I just had a question as you were saying that. If I were to come and stay with you guys or anybody in this room, what do you offer to the public as a stay at your?
One of the biggest things that we offer is reliability. When you book with us, you're not going to get a cancellation. You know when you book with us, your reservation is going to be guaranteed. Granted, anything can go wrong, but we're very reliable. We're very professional. My wife and I clean like you would never believe we clean, so we have a sparkling clean walkout basin that we offer. Bed linens, we deep clean probably on a monthly basis. I mean, we clean every time there's a guest, but we really get in and clean. We stay at Airbnbs all the time. And
inside and outside of the country.
Yeah, inside and out. So we picked up a lot of tips of the trade. We see what people are doing really well. We also see what people are doing horribly. So we're very, very professionally ran. So collaboratively through all of our stays, domestically and internationally, we try to mimic some of the things that are being offered by other successful guests or hosts. And so we incorporated that in our business plan. And one of the biggest things is cleanliness, and is it safe? So we offer, definitely cover both the cleanliness and the safety. You know, there's a lot of liability in anything, so we try to, you know, keep it as liability-free as possible and incorporate a lot of the safety measures to keep our guests safe. But again, we're right upstairs, so, you know, we want to be safe too. And then as far as what else we offer is there's like items on the property, you can walk down to the valley, there's a hammock, we cut paths. It's almost like when you walk through side cut, the big wide passage you can walk through. So you're walking past down to a large fire ring. It's probably 15 by 15 rounds. So they could sit down there and have a fire if they want to. They could walk a little bit further into the left, there's a hammock. And then if they walk all the way to the end of the property, there's a rocky beach. And we find that people are down there utilizing those amenities quite often, whether they're just sitting down on the beach meditating or whatever. It's very relaxing. It really is an experience more than just, I need a place to stay. So,
how do you vet your customers?
That's a good question. So we've gotten very good at vetting because, again, you don't know who you're bringing into your house. There's always a little bit of that hesitancy. But what we found is there's a couple things that we look at when we're contemplating accepting a guest. One is the length of time they've been on Airbnb and reviews. And time of year, you got to really use common sense. If you have a person that is looking to book in April, right around homecoming. Maybe sounds young. Just heard their Airbnb and reviews. You got to almost think maybe they're coming to your house to party for homecoming. So we've denied guests where we don't feel safe with that. But when you have a family of four coming in because for whatever reason, and they have 6 reviews, they've been on Airbnb for 7 years. That's pretty safe. We'll accept that. So we don't have to accept everything, and we don't. So that's how we do that. Oh, and then we get warnings. Well, one, Airbnb as a corporation sent out a no parking. Absolutely no parking. No, zero tolerance for it, which really helped us as hosts to have a corporation back us. And then what we do is when we get a request, we send out a quick warning. Hey, just to let you know, absolutely no parking. Absolutely no smoking. There's just things that are we have zero tolerance for. And then they're put on notice, they accept it, and then the evening prior, we send out another, here's how you get access, here's our address. Again, to reiterate, no partying, no smoking, no unnecessary noises, quiet hours, you know, 10 o'clock. And we've been very successful. We haven't had any issues.
So if you had no issues, how would you police it if something came up?
We have cameras on each corner of our house, so we do monitor, sit there and stare. But we have the capability to monitor. So even if we're at Meyer and Walmart, and we just pop in real quick, we're always there. And then the noise level is the biggest thing. It's not soundproof between floors by any means, but if it gets too loud, we can reach out to them. Hey, you guys are being loud. But we haven't had the need to, because I think our vetting process has been pretty good, you know. So,
how long is a typical stay? Like a weekend, a week?
What was
it
our
average?
About,
right now, it's been about 3.5 days.
Yeah, Airbnb gives a breakdown. It's a pretty awesome company because once you're in the system, they do statistics for you. And I mean, they break everything down. So I think our average stay was like 3.5. Our average guest was 3.1 guests. So we're far below a hotel or bringing in, you know, 50 people. That's not us. So the average stay is about 3 days-ish, and our average guests are about 3.
And what's your busiest time of the year then with that?
Fishing season.
Yeah, fishing season, walleye run. Having people come in for the walleye run. Summer's always busy. And then January is our slowest.
You just have one bedroom?
Yeah, we have the one bed, and then we have one bedroom with a queen, full queen, and then we have 2 pull-outs. So we can accommodate 6 guests.
Okay. Any other questions from the board?
Well, do all your guests usually come in one vehicle?
We average probably... What would you say?
1 to 2.
1 to 2, yeah.
So, what's a typical breakfast that you serve?
It's a continental breakfast. It's your traditional pastries, coffee juice, and some fruit.
Our kitchen is fully stocked.
Yeah, plus we go above and beyond and have a fully stocked kitchen, so.
It says in our reviews.
Right. So we've noticed with, you know, when you get into business, you get a little bit better, and you listen to the feedback. And so feedback is gold, because we were doing things a certain way, and then the feedback came, and we were, okay, let's tweak that. So, like, when they have children come in, we listened to the feedback as far as, hey, it would be really nice to have a pack and play or something.
Okay.
Bought a pack and play. $20 at Walmart, no big deal. Or, hey, it would be really nice if there is some snacks or something for the kids. Okay, no problem. Go to Costco, get a big bulk-sized thing of, like, popcorn or something like that. And then we have a lock closet that cleaning supplies and food items and stuff like that, bottled water. But, gosh, we have literally a fully stocked kitchen.
We have chips, hot tarts, we have oatmeal, we have, sometimes we'll put bananas
can
or
I
apples.
Ask you, if you're going to give testimony, can you come up here so that the microphone will pick you up and
absolutely.
I can also identify you in the minutes?
Sorry. Relying on my business partner.
Yeah, we're fully
stocked. So state your name.
Melissa Burns.
Address?
5931 North River Road.
And do you swear the testimony you're about to give before the board is the truth, so answer under God?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
So, fully stocked kitchen? Go ahead.
Yep, fully stocked kitchen. We have more than enough in there. We have anything from condiments, we have water, we have juices, we have bananas, we have apples, we have just produce, we have cereal, we have oatmeal, we have cereal bars, we have cupboards are full.
Yeah.
You name it. At least an item or two is in there.
We offer your typical, you know, one meal, typically the morning, like a bed and breakfast should, but we go way above and beyond. And so much so, we kind of laughed. We just stayed at Airbnb in Seattle literally 2 days ago, and I'm like,
and do you bring the breakfast down to them, or do they come up?
We try not to intrude so much, so it's there for them, like the pastries, the fruit, and stuff like that. Some of the stuff we just put in the refrigerator for them, but it's offered to them. We try to offer a lot of privacy, almost like the whole place is yours when you stay, so that could kind of bounce off your question, you know, what do you offer? We offer privacy, too. We stay out of the way, you know, so it's like, like the backyard, we're not back there intruding, kind of, even though it's our property. If somebody books, we kind of stay out of the way. We stay upstairs. We kind of plan cutting grass and trimming and things like that around the guest schedule. Because that's what we found is when we stayed at Airbnb, we don't necessarily want to run into the owner so much. We just stay out of the way.
But and if they want to talk to us, they can message or get a hold of us anyway. We give them our cell phone numbers too, so they can text or.
Yeah, we think the guests kind of appreciate that too, so it's not so awkward. You know, we might pass each other and say hi, but the meal itself is offered. If we typically will say, hey, if you need anything else, let us know. We literally are right upstairs. And most people say, that's fine. Most people are very independent guests. You know, they do their thing, they stay at our place, and,
Who runs it if you guys are out of town? Let's say you guys in Seattle, you know people.
We don't.
Oh, you don't?
Nope.
Oh, you're always there. Okay.
We will not have people stay if we're not there, because we don't want anything happening. Whether it's with a guest or with plumbing, you know, so we just block days.
Well, if you're a fireman, you work funny hours.
Yep.
I'm there.
Yeah. She's always there. So they have funny hours. They're awesome hours.
Different hours.
So you're right. And actually, on that, you know, with me being gone 24 hours, but home 48, I'm usually home 66, if not 70% a year. So I love my hours. but regardless, Melissa's always home.
So going back to, there's a question about parking and cars and things like that. Where, if you have six guests, you can go up to six, right?
Yeah.
So let's just say that there's six independent guys that are getting together for the walleye run and coming in. They're all driving six different vehicles. Where are you putting six vehicles at on this property?
Well, we have never, ever ran into that problem.
But you may not have, what happens if?
Well, I think what we would have to do is just say, hey, listen, we can accommodate X amount of cars, so you may want to consider carpooling, you know, bring it down to 2-3 cars or whatever. And then if not, then they have to park at a Meijer or something. I don't know, but we would actually reach out for they wouldn't just show up and be blindsided. We'd have to let them know that, hey, we can't accommodate X amount of cars. I mean, you know.
So how many vehicles can you accommodate, and where do they park?
We can actually, like, we can do, well, what the county, well, our driveway can actually accommodate 4 because it's big enough. We looked at the, it's 38 wide, 30 deep, and then going into the code, we can have 4 parking spots, you know, and it wouldn't affect us.
And that allows you guys to get in and out then?
Yeah, yeah. And that would be no problem at all. Yeah, so.
Has there ever been an instance where they've parked on the streets?
Yeah.
What do you do about that?
We do too.
Yeah, we do too. There's a lot of people that utilize it. Whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent, if you go up River Road, there's a lot of people that use the right of ways to park their vehicles. Because the topography is a little different out there, and some people have goofy driveways, and they just use the right of way.
Any other questions from the board at this point?
Are you aware of the hotel motel tax?
I wasn't sure how that worked since we're not technically defined as a hotel.
It covers everything.
Okay.
Hotel, motel, lodging, bed and breakfast. I think there might be another one. Both the Monclova Township has one and Lucas County.
Okay.
Has one.
Yeah, and we could pass that along to our accountant, which I'm assuming we did that in our taxes because we have Aaron Laser as our accountant.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any. I know the township's got to get involved, and I'm not aware of anything so far. But
I'm sorry, to clarify, are you saying that you are paying the lodging tax already?
I don't know how that works.
Yeah, I can confirm you are not.
Yeah. Yeah, truthfully, I don't know if he, because it's one of those things where at the end of the year, I think we get like an independent contractor of Airbnb. So we get our, sign a W-2, and then we file taxes. And I know he did something on the local level.
Well, I think that the township requires it to be paid quarterly.
Okay.
And I'm guessing that the county will also.
Yeah, yeah. And if you need to comply with that, it's in some county.
And then you realize that going to a B&B could change the status of the building use.
The occupancy.
Yeah, you go from strictly residential to a commercial.
Well, and that's Captain Bachelman. He's not in attendance, correct?
Yeah, he's not here at the moment.
Okay. Yeah, we, looking at his notes, and you might have him in front of him, but he was talking about some of the zoning from R1. And I think he got with Chuck down in Lucas County Building.
Yeah.
And they kind of clarified the R, more of an R3 occupancy use. And yeah, we're aware of that.
Okay.
But it wouldn't be commercial. We would just have an R3 occupancy use. Okay.
Well, then there's certain criteria that you can meet the fire code.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Which I believe that's sprinkler system, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, if
Captain Bachelman was here, because I reached out to him in an email after Lucas County called and said, hey, we're all on the same page now. It's not R1. There's no sprinkler system. It's an R3 occupancy use. Because you'd be more like a duplex, two family. And being R3, you wouldn't have to do all the sprinkler systems and whatnot. I actually wish he was here to confer. I mean, I have some of the building codes that I can provide, but that kind of reiterates what he would have said.
So I'm reading off of his letter dated July 21st, and item 3, it says the structure must have an automatic sprinkler in accordance with OFC 903.1.2. So that's why I asked the question.
Okay, can I grab something out of my...
Sure.
Is that true? Okay. This first item right here, I was speaking with a City of Toledo fire inspector, since, you know, I see him all the time, to kind of explain the situation, and he's like, look into that. So at the end of the day, he said, your biggest thing is occupancy. People coming into your home. He said, are you going to have 10 or more? He said, no, absolutely not even close. He said, then you're not R1. Because anything more than that, we start getting into hotels, commercial, R1, sprinkler systems, all that. And he said, you live there, right? I said, yeah. He said, okay, so then you're more of an R3. And then that was also backed up by check from the county. So these are some of the
highlights on that there.
That kind of explains a little bit of the R1. And there's,
Kathleen, just for the record, so if you want to put something in the notes of what he handed me.
Mm-hmm. And this kind of reiterates it here. This is the International Building Code for Harlem. And what it is it's boarding houses are transient with more than 10 occupants. And that's the other one. There's the International Building Code, and it's highlighted. And so, with that being well below the 10, we would fall into the R3.
Okay.
And then here's the R3.
Yeah, I've seen the correspondence going back and forth.
Yeah, and I was hoping he was going to be here, because I thought once you look at his notes without him being here, so we figured we better be prepared and kind of try to answer that on our own. So, let's see. That's mostly.
Can you give those back?
That's all yours. So it's really based on light hazards or light loads and anything more than 10. You would bump up to a higher.
I saw some of the correspondence, and there's a number of 10 in there, but
yeah,
they're talking fire code stuff, and it's
right.
Yeah,
range. I understand.
Yeah, it's like a second language to me.
Okay, so from the board, any questions additionally, other than what we have had right now? If not, appreciate you guys' time. So we'll get back to that. So hang on 1 second. Okay. So I'm gonna open the floor up for those in favor, those opposed. So I want those in favor to make their way one at a time to the podium there to be sworn in. So anyone in favor? So come on up.
Okay, man, don't move that fast.
Okay, it's okay. So could you state your name and address for the record, please?
Donald Harrison Nieter. I live at 5925 North River Road. adjacent house.
So we'll pause right there.
Okay.
So we'll swear you in next. So do you swear that the testimony you're about to give before the board is the truth, as you will answer unto God?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Go proceed.
No, I live, my wife and I, Debbie, live just downstream, directly adjacent, and the house would be close, absolutely the house is closest to Chris and Melissa's. Since they've been there, the improvements they've done on the house, my wife and I both agree, have only improved the value of our house and the value and the nature of the neighborhood. The people that have been coming, I work from home. The only thing Chris and Melissa realize this, I work from home on the second floor remotely for the University of Michigan, and I've seen some people out there kind of looking out in the morning, they'll be having their coffee and look out the river. And I've gone out and talked to them. And 201, they're like, oh my, Chris, you know, you're asking, what does it offer? 201, they said, I have no idea. This was this gorgeous. You know, I pictured Toledo, Waterville. This Toledo, what does it have to offer? Recently, a woman who worked for the city of Detroit was up there, and she was, this is gorgeous. And all of them said, oh my gosh, I would love to come back. And, you know, this is, we had no idea it was this nice, which is kind of nice because we kind of forget how nice it is where we live as well. If there would be a noise problem, I guarantee my wife and I, who have never had children, would be up in arms. That has never been a problem. And everyone I've talked to has been super nice. The parking would essentially be directly adjacent to our house. I can't fathom how that, if it would affect anybody, it would affect us. And we've looked at it, it's like, I can't fathom how that would affect us at all. The issue of parking up by the road, we have a garage on a heated driveway, which sounds like an incredible luxury, but our driveways there are like this. So yeah, we both park up by the garage too. So, you know, I saw some reluctance to that, but if you live on that section of the road, especially in the wintertime, you will pick a park up by the road, unless you have a helicopter take you out of your driveway that's like this. But we just wanted to say that we feel like everything Chris and Melissa have done to the house have only improved the value of the property. The fact that people have become aware of this and now want to come back is only going to increase the awareness of them wanting to come back for things like concerts at the amphitheater. I forget. We've got an island behind our house. We have rapids. People come, you know, walleye fish, and it's like, I just didn't realize it was so nice. We feel like this is probably, in a small way, one of the best ways to promote where we live and improved our house by nature of what they've done. You know, we go down to the river, and we said, well, what does it offer? It's like a park down there. And you go down, and you've got foxes and the bald eagle nest across the river. You leave the window open at night. You've got the rapids behind. You can hear the water running. If you want seclusion, you know, again, being like this down from the road, the rest of the world is up there. You've got the river and everything behind it. So I just, if it was going to affect anybody, it would affect us. And we have so far, and knowing Chris and Melissa, I can't believe any issue wouldn't be taken care of immediately. Everything that's been done has only benefited us, and I think in the long term will benefit the area, the Montville, the township.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. Anyone else in favor? Come on up. So, for the record, please state your name and address.
Debbie Russett, 5925 North River Road, Waterville.
Okay, thank you. Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give before this board is the truth, as you will answer under God?
I do.
Okay, thank you. Proceed.
So Don spoke about the property and whatnot. I wanted to speak about Chris and Melissa a little bit. Since the first day they moved in, the person that owned the property previously was Mr. Wilhoit, when he was in his 90s, so of course it was a bit dated, and they immediately started improving the property. Updating, making things look great, not only lovely, but artistically lovely. But they are the most, as you could see from them speaking up here, the most quiet, the most conscientious under the radar type of people you will ever meet. They're very conscientious about their own property, about the cleanliness of their own property, having everything being so nice, and they are just meticulous about everything, but they're very quiet and calm, and there has never been, when they've had family and friends over, there's never been any loudness over there. There's never been an abundance of cars that might have seemed like it was bothering the neighborhood. It's always been that way. They've been there about 3 years now, and it's been, you couldn't get it more quiet than Mr. Will Hoyt in his 90s. He was pretty quiet. But it's, otherwise, it's very quiet, but it's just beautiful, and it's park-like, like they said. It's just it's amazing how nice they've made it.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, any other in favor? Okay, we're going to flip it a little bit. Those opposed.
I'm Gary Coons, Jr., agent for the property owners to the south of the proposed property.
Which is what at?
59-59 and 59-61.
59.
Yeah, well, in the adjacent lot is 61.
59 goes
by 59. So there are two separate parcels, one with an improved house where they reside.
Okay, so let's swear you in. So you've stated your name, you've stated the address for which you're representing, right? And so we've got that square. Are you okay with that so far? Okay. So do you swear that the testimony you're about to give before the board is the truth, so answer under God? Okay, proceed, please.
First of all, I'd just like to say you didn't give me the option of speaking in the middle, either not against or not for. Clearly, the applicants are fantastic people, and they've done a nice job with the house. I take nothing away from that. The house was actually remodeled by my father for a three-year period after Mr. Wilhoyt sold him the property, and everything was done except for the basement, which is now the subject of today's meeting. It's a beautiful property, and they've done a beautiful job with it. I will not deny that. But I think as we all stand here and listen to their track record, we have to appreciate that they don't do everything by the book, because they operated a bed and breakfast for a better part of the year without coming before this board and getting permission. So now we're stuck standing here assessing the application in an already improved position, which leaves anybody with a legitimate complaint or concern a little bit in the back seat, if you will. There's only four criteria. The whole commercial application use, I think, is an unfortunate version of our Ohio Revised Code, but it's not for me to complain or you guys to assess. I have to go to Columbus and make that argument. So we're down to basically the three or four criteria that are provided for in the zoning resolution, and I guess I would have to say that I think that the zoning resolution falls short of the potential impact of what bed and breakfasts could possibly bring to the community. In essence, our application rests on the integrity of the two applicants, who could sell the property at any time and move on. I'm not saying that's their intention. I'm just saying that then we'll be subject to the new owners, the new operators. This is a gut check. We're going to go with you guys, since clearly they have a track record, and now we stand here assessing the application. Parking is a problem, and it needs to be addressed. We have had several cars parked in the right-of-way on our property, but let me be very clear about the right-of-way on this section of River Road. It is private property to the center line of stick. It is not public access as you would have in a normal subdivision, the 60-foot wide right-of-way. So when you park in front of somebody's house, you're parking in public right-of-way. When you park in the right-of-way in front of my mother and father's property, you are parking on their property. Okay? So there's a distinct difference. And yes, we've had several instances where these cars are lined up on our side. No disrespect to the neighbors on the other side who said parking is not an issue. it is an issue. It depends on what side of the street or what side of the subject property you're sitting on. There have been no serious situations that have occurred. I'm not going to stand here and fabricate any or pretend like we've had any problems. We haven't. However, what is the policing authority? What will happen if there are circumstances that start happening? People wandering. They talk about how lovely it is parkland-like. It is, but it's also private property. If you want to go to a park, Stitt Road is a mile and a half up the road. Have at it. But you go down to the river at your bed and breakfast and start wandering up and down, are we going to call the sheriffs every time that happens? Are we going to be the bad neighbors? We have no intention of that. But there is a policing requirement pursuant to the zoning code relative to the five aspects that they talk about. Substantially changing the integrity of the neighborhood, impacts, noise, light, things of that. What happens? It hasn't happened. What happens when it does? I don't know if the township's prepared to handle that. I think that once we have this application go through, it's just going to open the can of worms for more. I can't say that'll happen, but why wouldn't it? I mean, this is an opportunity to create a business model in your home without having to go through any of the typical business requirements. That's fine. The law provides for that. I'm not arguing that. But, by the way, it's not a hotel tax. It's a lodging tax. So the lodging tax should prevail as they have lodgers. Just point of reference. I'll entertain any questions, but other than that, we're not trying to be the bad guys. We have a parking problem. You know, we have potential access problems. We've had people wandering in our backyards before from the B&B. You cannot put a fence up down there. The river runs through it every year. It's not going to happen. No problems with noise or lighting, but if we do, we come back to this board. What is the recourse? What's the police power from the township? Should have had a glass of water. So if you have any questions, I'll take
it. There's an extra bottle of water.
Here you go. I haven't even opened it.
There you go. Here, you want it.
Any questions from the board?
I appreciate your time and your attention. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else opposed? Go ahead and state your name and address for the record, please.
My name is Gary Coons, and my address is 5959 North River Road, Waterville, Ohio.
Okay. Raise your right hand and swear you in. Do you swear that the testimony you're about to give before the board is the truth, so as you will answer unto God?
I do.
Okay. Please proceed.
I'm going to be very brief because I don't want to repeat things that my son has stated. I do agree with his assessment of the applicants. They're good people. They've never caused me any difficulties. I did sell the house to them. It had been improved perhaps to 80%, and they did finish it, and they did a nice job. That's not the issue here, folks. The issue is the neighborhood is a single-family neighborhood. I've lived at the residence for over 50 years. I have now next door to me a B&B, a motel, if you will, and I would state to you that, and I don't know where any of you live, but I don't think any of you would like to have that situated in your side yard. It's not directly on my against my house, but against the lot that I acquired as a result of the purchase of the Wellhoy property, which they now own. But the property was purchased for my privacy, to retain the neighborhood as it had been all my adult life, essentially. And I do intend to sell it. It was bought as an investment property as well. And having an investment property with a bed and breakfast next to it, what do you think that's going to mean to the value of that property? There's only one river lot left I believe, in that whole section, and I have it. And I paid dearly for it, and I don't like the idea of having a motel next to it, even though it might be an excellent facility. And as my son pointed out, if the current owners were to sell, who do you have then that inherits this conditional use, which, if it's granted, they would have the right to. Only one correction that I noted with regard to parking. I have a picture, and it should be in the file, of three pickup trucks parked on my property, and it was in the fishing season, the gentleman was fishing. And that wasn't the only occasion. That's the only occasion I just did take a picture. And I think that the proposed parking that has been talked about, being quite familiar with the house, is going to be really problematic for any guests that come that are strangers because of the steep and narrow condition of that driveway. All you have to do is go there and witness it, and you'll know what I mean. So, because it was confirmed that parking in the right-of-way is not permitted, now they're shifting and struggling to find parking by going down a very steep driveway and on the opposite end of the property. So, I came up here also to offer answers to any of the materials that I gave as a part of the file, and or if you have any other questions for me.
Questions from the board?
What, after you took the picture of the three trucks, where did they go to the river?
They went to the house, which is right in front of the third pickup truck.
They went to the...
Went to the bed and breakfast, yeah. And then they went down, walked down to the...
You don't know if they were guests of the bed and breakfast or just...
No, they were fishermen. And they were just fishermen. I watched them fish out of my... window yeah. each day, and I saw them walk up to their house. So I'm personally familiar with what was going on there. And we see a fair number of other people that come and go, and yeah, they haven't caused any particular problems. But they do go fishing, and they get over into my property in the process. Okay, now I can't go down there and yell at them. I wouldn't. I'm not inclined to do that. I've never done it in the 50 years I've lived there. But that's what happens. You know, and I think the precedent is one of the biggest issues here. If, you know, you open the door to this, there's 40, 50 houses along River Road there in that section. And who's to say that they see this opportunity and seize on it? And they have the conditions, you know, better, perhaps. I mean, down by the apartment building down there, those people that have river houses there actually own the land on the other side of the road and could put all the parking they want and still be on the same parcel. So it is a very possible scenario from the point of view of other people doing what they're doing. And I think, you know, you have a hard time when you permit one to do it to say no to the other. And this is a single-family neighborhood. I mean, I'm not trying to say it's going to be life or death, but quite frankly, I don't think you change this neighborhood and make it into a two-family or a motel-like environment, regardless of how good they've, you know, done the job. So, if there's anything else?
Do you have any issues with outside of the walleye run coming down there, or is it pretty much isolated at that time of year?
Well, I'm not going to say that the parking is probably more of an issue then,
okay.
But the parking has always been on the road in the right-of-way. And if you drive up and down River Road, there are very, very few houses that have any kind of parking in the road right-of-way. There's a couple houses down the road on the riverside, and that's because they don't have a garage down below like these folks talked about. You know, most people have garages, but they are a little hard to negotiate, most of them. And that's what they're proposing to do with their guests, is to have them negotiate this very steep and narrow driveway.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you all.
With no further testimony, I would move to... Yes, sir.
Do you have a chance to rebut a couple of things to clarify?
Come on up.
So, a couple of things. I can understand Mr. Cohen's concern.
Could you speak up, please? I can't hear you.
I can understand your concern. I can. The lot next to us, adjacent to us on the right, is a vacant lot owned by Gary. It's a 100-foot frontage. It is overgrown, and it couldn't be a better buffer. I can barely see his home. It's definitely going to keep down on even conversation noise. I can't hear him when he's at his home. I don't think he can hear us. So that's a nice buffer. Conditional use, if we sell the home, I think the conditional use follows us as the owners, correct?
No, it follows the property.
Okay, it follows the property, but it's done annually, correct? We have to reapply?
No.
Okay.
It ends, what, a year after?
It would end, yeah, if it was vacant.
After you,
yes, vacant.
Right. So there's a time limit.
Yeah, there's a time limit.
It's not indefinite. So I can understand the concern, but it's going to terminate at some point. It's not indefinite.
That's just not true.
It is for the code.
I
think states it.
No, if you stop using the bed and breakfast for a year, you would have to go back in and get your conditional use. If it doesn't stop, it doesn't ever go away.
Yeah, if you would sell the property to someone else and they immediately started it, it could go on for many years.
The chances of Airbnb, the 50 or 60 houses that he mentioned, is just not true. If you go into the resolution, we are one of the the only zoning AR that gives a bed and breakfast conditional use. It is not a single family home exclusively. There's actually a two family townhouse across the street owned by Gary, directly across the street from us, and a 30 unit townhouse complex quarter mile from us. So it's not necessarily true that it's exclusively single family. There are multi-family occupancies directly within a quarter mile from us, 100 feet from us, as a matter of fact.
As far as a motel goes, this will never amount to a motel. My family designed, owned, and operated a motel right over here on Airport. It was, I believe it's now the Baymont, but when they owned it, it was Super 8 Motel. So I know exactly how all that works, and that is not our intention.
And by the state of Ohio definition, you're not a hotel. So we want to get away from the hotel motel verbiage, because we're not a hotel motel. We are a 10 or less better bed and breakfast with very minimal guests that are not going to impact the Monclova land use in the Five Points. If you look at that, it's not going to be anything that's detrimental to the neighborhood. It's not going to change anything. And as far as the driveway goes, we maneuver our driveway with no problem at all. So it is what it is. We can get up and down our driveway. So is it steep? That's subjective. You know, I mean, define steep, you know. But we can get up and down, no problem at all.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to add?
Okay.
I think we're good.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
At this point, I would like to put a motion forward to close public testimony.
By Ross. On the motion, I lost my cards, hold on. Stanton.
Yes.
Stewart.
Yes.
Ballmer.
Yes.
Lyons.
Yes.
And Ross.
Yes.
I'd like to take a pause and make a motion to go into executive session.
Second by Bowman. On the motion, Lines?
Yes.
Ross?
Yes.
Stanton?
Yes.
Stewart?
Yes.
Bowman?
Yes.
Well, appreciate everybody's patience. Make a motion to come out of executive session.
Second
by Bowman. On the motion, Bowman?
Yes.
Lines?
Yes.
Ross?
Yes.
Stanton?
Yes.
Stewart?
Yes.
So after initial talks, we've come to the conclusion that we need to have some further deliberation. The hour's late. It's 7 o'clock this evening. And so we would ask that we continue this conversation. One of the dates that we've thrown out is July 25th at 4:30. And Kathleen, is there anything on the docket that's going to prevent us from doing that?
Hold on a second.
Yes, sorry about that.
You said she'd know off the top of her head.
Yeah, it's a Tuesday, yeah. Tuesdays sometimes are makeup days. We have a holiday, you know, push a meeting back one day.
We do have Safety Township that week, so are you meeting Scott Bachelman in attendance? Can we set it for that date and then I'll check with them? If it changes, I can communicate.
Sure. Is that okay with you guys? Is that okay with you? Is that date?
Yes.
Meet with your schedule?
That works with us.
Okay, we're trying to do it as soon as what we possibly can. We had some vacations that we're trying to work around up here, too.
That's
so
okay.
We're trying to get that done. So July 25th, 4:30?
Yes, that works for us.
I'd make a motion to adjourn this evening's meeting.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.